us critical review of constructive QT. And here there is, I think, subtitle was missing, the tip of the iceberg.
So thanks a lot for the invitation. So the title was given by the organizer, so I did not change it. So I didn't dare to change the title. So it remains as it was, also because I like. But when I was preparing the talk, I realized that it's a bit difficult to speak about quantum theory without saying anything about constructive quantum theory, without saying anything about quantum theory. So I will give a short introduction to quantum theory, which is, of course, a sort of impossible task, but I think it's necessary. And also because the constructive quantum theory at the time was very much embedded with physics and quantum theory. So it's a bit difficult to separate the story. So my talk is divided in three parts. I mean, I will read you some basic facts on quantum theory. Yeah, then
I can't call them.
now.
I don't know here. Oh.
So then I will speak about the golden age of quantum theory. So I will sorry, of constructive quantum theory, and then I will tell you some more recent results. First, I want to stress that I will focus about high energy physics, but the community of a lot of people working in constructive quantum theory around the 90s shift to condensed matter. So I mean, I've seen that a number of papers quoted in this conference stopped it in the 90s, but the point is that this community went in the direction of condensed matter with the idea that with the reasonable idea that condensed matter was simpler, and there are more models. So I mean, there were two papers, Fatt and Galavotti and Federman and Trubowitz in the 90s. I remember well because it was just in the period that I started my research. Then all this a number of people went in this direction. Unfortunately, I mean, the idea was that condensed matter is much simpler than quantum theory. It is, but it's also very much difficult. In fact, the idea was that to understand ITC superconductivity, which is still open, I mean, since 40 years and so the idea was, I mean, let's do a simpler program, ITC superconductivity. And then, of course, I mean, there was a conference in Rome just about ITC superconductivity, the situation that even in physics is the same as in the 90s. So this is the reason why I will stop in the 90s, but from the 90s on, there is a lot of research about extended Fermi surface, Hubbard models. The idea was to prove or ITC superconductivity or even normal superconductivity. None of this goal was achieved. So this is the reason why we stop about now. So, but let's start about quantum theory, which is the sort of basis of our modern physics, of course. It's the language of physics. Is applied in energy physics, in the condensed matter, in statistical physics, and so on. And I cannot resist to put some numbers because I like numbers. So this is a famous example so shown to every student in physics to motivate them. I mean, the geomagnetic factor, in which this is the theoretical prediction used done with the standard model, and this is the electron geomagnetic matter factor measured. This measure, I think, refers to some Harvard group in Harvard and by Gabriel. And then you see it's impressive the precision of this prediction. So this is a sort of spectacular result of standard model that cannot be forgotten. In fact, there is this famous sentence by Feynman, but now the precision is much better than that. So I mean, this is a number that cannot be forgotten. Okay, it's incredible. All these numbers are the same. There is a small deviation for the Moore. For the electron, now the Fermilab we want to understand this small discrepancy for the okay. Of course, I mean, these are obtained by series. These series are non-convergent, are even not asymptotic. So this truncation is unclear how it's found. So I mean, there is a very nice problem for everyone, not only mathematicians, but all humanity, to understand how it's possible that we get this so spectacular prediction with mathematics clear. And I would say the situation is very much the same as 300 years ago, in which Newton doesn't use, of course, derivatives, using infinitesimals and fluxions and strange objects, which are not very well infinitesimals, which were very not well defined mathematically. And then Berkeley, which was more mathematically oriented, said something like, these are goals of the Parker quantities, cannot understand what are the infinitesimals. but it was very, very much aware that these things were, I mean, the prediction of Newton were correct. So, I mean, after 100 years of war, at the end, we understand the mathematics of Newton, and then I think after 100 years of war, we will understand the mathematics of quantum field theory. Okay, so, but then this is an introduction. Let's say basic concept of quantum field theory. Okay, as we know, as everyone knows, quantum field theory observes as written in the probabilistic averages. So fields are typically defined on a lattice. So, and then, which is called the inverse of the lattice, is called the ultraviolet cutoff. Then there is a finite volume, which is called also the infrared cutoff. Then the infrared problem is to remove the volume. And this is typically of interest in condensed matter. If you want to consider instead the continuum limit, that is the limit of crucial limit for quantum field theory. So the don't forget that the lattice is a regularization for high energy physics, but instead for condensed matter is the physical ionic lattice, so you don't want to remove it. Okay, so but the mathematics is very similar, right? You put a lattice and then you want to see what you have. So then also it's important to recall that the ultraviolet limit exists, it is believed to exist for the strong sector, as we heard, is asymptotically free, but not for the other two sectors of the standard model, the electron. So one can keep this effective point of view. So you don't want really to remove the lattice, but you want to keep it large enough so you don't see its effect. This is a possibility. So you consider that the standard model holds up to a certain energy scale. And the mathematical problem, I will tell something about that, is to get some values which is okay, so. And as everyone said, I mean, the basic object are the Schwinger functions, which are written as probabilistic averages. So they are written as averages of object with a probability measure. So it is also interesting to introduce the generating functions and effective potential. So let's say something. So in the both, so one put, I put myself on a lattice, so I will avoid problems of definition. So I put on a lattice, then in the bosonic case, you have the phi, this big phi are just belong to R, are Gaussian variables. Then this is the famous phi 4 model. Then of course you can write the expectation in terms of sum of product of covariances, what is called the Wick rule, in terms of propagator. And then you can use these expectations to write formally a sum of Feynman graphs, or if you consider the log connected Feynman graphs. Let me recall that, I mean, this is just a way to represent. In fact, for instance, Schwinger, which is one of the heroes of quantum field theory, didn't like very much these Feynman graphs. So Feynman graphs are not something really intrinsic to quantum field theory. In fact, Schwinger said something like, I mean, now everyone can understand quantum field theory, but it was not positive about that. I mean, said, okay, everyone now is like, he said something like, it's like small calculators that everyone can make a square root of, I don't know, 110 instead of using mine. So he didn't like to use that everyone could make computation using graphs. I mean, so that's okay. So pure bosonic theories, X models, pure Young and Mills, easy models in D, greater than 3, and so on. Then there are the fermions. The fermions are instead, was introduced in some talk, the fermions are given in terms of Grassmann variables. There is this representation very similar to the other ones, but it's deeply different. The bosonic one are generalization of Gaussian integral. This is a generalization of determinants, essentially. So Fermi model, which was the first quantum field theory, models for conduction electron, PCS, Abarth, Ising models, dimers, six vertex, eight vertex, all of that. So for instance, this is the Fermi model in D equal to 4. This one is the formal way to write it. Then if you want to write it on a lattice, you put yourself on a lattice, and then you have to add, for instance, this term, which is called the Wilson term. This is a wave, because there is this annoying fact that if you put on a lattice, you get too many poles. So you kill the fake poles, you have to add or Wilson terms or other method.
Yeah, okay, I should use the pointer because we don't see when you point, we don't see anything.
I see a green point.
No, we don't see.
What are they do?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let's go on. So again, now you can write in terms of graphs using a sum of, again, you have, again, the big rule, which was a student of Perry, and then you can write with the same with this signs, okay? Then you have bosons and fermions, quantum electrodynamics, electroweak theory, all the standard model, quantum chromodynamics, and so on. So this is the massive quantum electrodynamics for dimension. I put the mass because it's simpler. Then on the lattice, so you can read the blackboard. I mean, you have the integration respect to the A, which are bosons, and the psi, which are fermions. Okay, and then you put on the lattice. The interaction is for, can be written in this way. So formally, you have this again, this something like that, F squared plus M plus the mass and so on. So now there are some interesting points to say that there is formally, this is as invariance under this phase transformation, and this implies by classically by Noether theorem, the conservation of the current. If there is no mass, there is invariance also with respect to the chiral. Okay, then if there is no mass of the photon, you have also this gauge invariance. Also, it's important that physical observable are gauge invariant. Okay, so there is no, you have this psi, doesn't, you don't change the thing. So this is formally. The problem is that if you want to put everything on a lattice, then some of the such properties are lost. So you can, we can add, in the case of massive U1, you can add the psi term also in the lattice. Then you, the longitudinal part of the boson propagator, this one, GA, becomes this one. And then instead of the conservation of the current, you have these world identities, which are exact in this model. But they could be not exact if you consider other regularization, for instance, momentum one. Okay. Also, it's important that there is independence on psi, because then you can put psi equal to one and eliminate the longitudinal part. So this would be not true with other regularization. Now instead, the chiral current is not conserved anymore instead. So this, the Noether theorem is violated, and then you have this, this famous formula that I will comment later. If you consider the electroweak, is even more difficult because now the interaction is chiral, so you need you cannot put the mass of the fermions. Then there is the famous cascade of problems, which was solved by the heroes in the 70s. Then you have to put the X generate the mass, but there are the anomalies must cancel out, and so on. So there is a cascade of problems that can be, you can solve just looking at that. Okay, so the point is that in the electroweak sector, you have the interaction is you have chiral currents, and this chiral currents is not, this chiral symmetry, you don't have any more this invariance with respect to psi and so on. But this is just, I will come back to this.
There you cannot even write a model. So in for electron magnets,
yes, in fact,
there is not even a model that you could write.
In fact, I did not write. That's exactly the reason why I didn't write it, because I can't. So yeah, that's the point. But on the other hand, I mean, must exist something. So okay, anyway. Yes, in fact, this is the reason why. So let's see the history of the glorious history of randomization. So let's now proceed as it was done. So we remove all cutoffs, and then we use the big rule formally. Then we remove all cutoffs, so we get a series. And then it was this discovery of the first people doing computation that you get infinite. Okay, so the idea is that you have these diverging integrals. Then you can make regularization, which are not just done order by order, for instance, momentum regularization. And then this was the regularization of Bethe, Dyson, Feynman, and so on. You can say, okay, also the Bayer coupling is changed. Then I invert formally, I put the cutoff, I invert this relation, I write the dressed coupling in terms of pair coupling in terms of the dressed one, and then I get this series in the dressed. And then the miracle is that in certain theories, this P lambda is finite. So that was the big discovery, first of all, the parameter this happens. And then you can say, okay, epsilon dressed, I put a number, okay, computed by experiments, and then I truncate the series, and then I get predictions, okay?
So now there is the famous criteria of normalizability, which is obtained. It's very, very simple because you obtain this criterion just making this power counting. And then, for instance, for phi four, this is the formula. Then, if there is the n is the order, and then this is the dimension, n is the number of Fermi fields, and psi, and so on. So you will see the Fermi model is not normalizable in equal to four, and so instead, phi four is normalizable in equal to four, and so on.
But of course, I mean, this is just a very rough criterion, but to prove that to all orders you can absorb the divergences is not easy at all. In fact, there was this famous proof by Bobadilla and Parasyuk, which was able to prove to all orders, because it's not obvious at all that because we have this problem that diagrams at any order contains any possible kinds of subdiagrams, it's not easy to do. So even the proof of that was a very hard piece of mathematics done by Bogoluf and Parasyuk and Hecht, Zimmermann, and so on. But then, unfortunately, for quantum electrodynamics or for gauge theories, things are much more difficult because it's not enough to consider a power counting to understand if the model is renormalizable. You need more. The power counting is not good. You see immediately, you needed a reduction of degree of divergences. So if you remember, the boson propagator has this part here. This goes bad if you, so. Let's say in this way, it's equal to one, so it does not decrease. So if you use the propagator as it is, you will get terms which are not decaying. So the theory apparently is not normalizable. So you have to prove that this piece, the longitudinal contribution, is zero. Otherwise, you get a non-renormalizable theory. And then, as we've seen, that depends on world identity. As Slava was saying, in the electroweak model, there is even no way to write that, and so on. So, in addition, the
running coupling constants are not independent. There are relations, even by the world identity. But these world identities are broken by cutoff. And so on. So there are a number of problems when you, it's not simply power counting if you want to apply this to gauge theory. And then in the chiral case, there is even another problems that you can, there is, for instance, in the electroweak, there are possibilities of doing that only if the anomalies we have seen, they cancel. In fact, it was shown that they cancel in 74 by Heliopoulos and others. It is, I think, something very, very nice that you get normalizability only if you have leptons and quarks, and then only if the charges of that verify this relation, which at the end imply that the proton and the electron has opposite charges. Okay? So it's very nice that is that without randomization, all our work immediately disappears because the atoms would be not neutral anymore. It's nice that mathematically we get that condition that I find very, very nice. Okay, so it's not normalizable if you don't have that the proton and the electron has the opposite charge. Okay, so it's not anthropic, it's just that the theory is not normalizable. Okay, so at the end of this story, it was very short, but it's the glorious time of the. You get randomizability. So, for instance, the geomagnetic factor is a series, and then all the coefficients are finite. You can truncate. And then you get this, for instance, the geomagnetic factor. So, the first computation is the 48 computation of Schwinger. Actually, in the tomb of Schwinger, this formula, alpha over pi, Schwinger put this formula in this tomb. And then these other people, Sommerfeld. I mean, there was a mistake, and maybe no time to describe this now. Instead, there was a mistake in the computation, like A20, a diagram was missed, and then Karpus makes a mistake, and then it was corrected later, and so on. And then also want to remind this Jacob and Weinberg, 72, in which they compute there. And then the best result is this Aoyama, and then it's done numerically. Okay, so they compute all these numbers, and then you get this number that, but of course, you can say, as mathematicians, about this series, we know that it's not convergent. So how can be? Okay. So let me say now very quickly that the more modern way to see realization, but it's not obvious that it's completely equivalent to the other one. So I think people in the high energy physics make computation that yes.
Sorry, since you were talking about perturbative normalizability, what is the status for the full standard? Is it full enrichment? Full standard?
I will count to them. I would say not. Yeah, sure. Even you will. I didn't want to tell this, but I said sorry. So there is the famous Stokes proof that I will comment about. So he got the Nobel Prize for that, so of course it's a very important result. So let's see what he can actually do. That's the same what I will arrive there. If I can, because talk of history of humanity and to brief history of humanity, I mean, from pyramids to war. Okay. So then we arrive to the 70s, the organization group. The organization group is another point of view. You integrate scale by scale, as we've seen in some talk. And then you get a sequence of years, which are after using this.
Using the fact that the sum of Gaussian variables is still a Gaussian variable, so you decompose, you can write you make the second equality, you integrate, and then you get a series, and you get a series of effect potentials.
Now the main idea is scale invariance. So you notice that the fields with a certain cutoff is distributed almost in a similar way, but with the scale factor in front, and then you recognize that the monomials behave as the monomials with the n cutoff. Up to a factor. This factor is given by this.
And again, you rediscover the dimension found using perturbation theory. Okay, so now if this, so now the terminology of Ramesian group, if this object decreases, it is called irrelevant. If this increase, it's called relevant. If it remains more or less the same, it is called marginal. So the integration is done separating the relevant terms from the others. So the others are called random coupling constants, and then are if the quadratic terms are put in the free measures, then change the mass, the wave function optimization, so on. The others are called the effective coupling. So they change the coupling, and then as was said before, this coupling can decrease or increase. So now in high energy physics, one chooses the parameters at scale n to a fixed values and then to scale zero. In condensed matter, one does the opposite. One starts from zero and then go in the direction of the deep infrared. So let's consider quantum field theory in high energy physics. So in a non-renormalizable theory, for instance, then the coupling decreases. Then lambda dress, but then you want the lambda dress is order one. So this means that you cannot increase too much. So this means that there is an intrinsic cutoff scale of the order of the inverse of the coupling. Okay. So in a normalized theory, it means that there is a maximum. So it goes well in the direction of the infrared. So you cannot go too high in the ultraviolet. So normalized theory is very good in the infrared and very bad in ultraviolet. It's the opposite for the supernormalized models. So now let's consider renormalizable models in which you have some dimension which is zero. Then again, you distinguish between three cases: marginal relevant, marginal irrelevant, and marginal marginal. Okay. So these three cases are the three cases we have to consider. Okay. So QED, quantum electrodynamics, which is the most beautiful theory according to Mini, or electroweak marginally only theory are marginally irrelevant. So there is a maximal cutoff. But this cutoff is very high, so physically it would be good to get bounds up to the scale into the 137, but still it's marginally relevant. Instead, as was said before, in QCD is marginally relevant, and then you have this asymptotic freedom. So it's very bad in the infrared. In the infrared, you have this mass generation. So let me make a short recap.
So infinities require the introduction of a cutoff to be removed. But there is a relation between reversibility and cutoff. In a normalizable theory, the cutoff could be exponentially high, while in a
non-renormalizable could be a power. So in fact, a non-renormalizable theory is not bad at all. It is perfectly consistent. In fact, Fermi theory, the famous tentativo di una teoria dei raggi beta of the 34, is non-renormalizable, but it works very well up to cutoff of that time, and in fact, if it's used for the prediction of the charm, for instance, so it's good. I looked this paper, and then they assume that
in which they predict the charm, and they assume that the theory is analytic. In fact, it is analytic, but I had no occasion to tell this to Mariani, but it is really analytic.
really anything in a mathematical sense. Okay. But that then it works only up to scales 1 over e squared. So it was good for the experiment of the 50s, but now it's very bad. Now it's a very, very low scale. So they were very well aware that. So quantum electrodynamic state is renormalizable. This is a big discovery of Dyson, Tomonaga, Schwinger, and Feynman. Then one could reach asymptotically high cutoffs. However, the normativity, as I said, require world identities, and then you need world identities. They are broken by relation group and so on. Even more difficult, the electroweak theory. You don't have to put the mass of the electron because otherwise you break chiral symmetry, but then the mass is generated by the X. Even by, so there is this famous normalizability proof in which he assumed the validity of world identities. Okay, so the proof to prove the normalizability of electroweak theory. So if you read the Weinberg paper of 2 pages, theory left is written, I guess that this theory is renormalizable. Then Tuft proved to all order that the non-longitudinal attack is zero, so he proved the normalizability, assuming that the world identities are true. But then these world identities are true only if the anomaly is cancelled. So the model of Weinberg by itself is not normalizable. You have to put quark and leptons so that it's out. At the end, everything works. Sorry. Okay. But as it was saying, you need for these anomalies to cancel what is called Adler-Bardeen theorem, which says that anomalies are given only by the lower order. And even worse, the big problem is that for the electroweak sector, there are no regularization ensuring, as in the QED case, that there is a X independent. This regularization could exist only for the values of the charges. So it's not obvious at all.
If there is no regularization, how do people do calculations?
Well, they're just using dimensional regularization. Okay. I don't think they use really as far as I asked to a lot of people if they make computation with the Monte Carlo and so on, I don't think they do it right for themselves. You have to ask people to say, but I think they use Monte Carlo and so on just for a strong sector, not for the weak. For the weak, they just use graphs.
Yes, but that's what we usually mean in physics, perturbative renormalizability. You know, you use Timurag, does it work? If it works, you're happy. You're saying at that level, are you happy or not?
The level of dimensional realization, yes.
Okay.
The point is that I'm not happy as a mathematical physicist.
Sure.
And then there is this asymptotic freedom, Gross and Wilczek, and so on, the infinite mass generation, which is the topic of this conference. Okay, also don't remember that there are a lot of prediction in condensed matter and so on. Okay, so anyway, so finally, this ends the first part, so it should be on time. Okay, in 10 minutes, I spent all quantum field theory. So now let's just consider the classical result in mathematical physics. So Gallavotti and Nicolò tried to write understood the Wilson remission group in terms of in a mathematical physics way, finding bounds for the coefficients. So you get bounds. And but then these are not still perturbative, but at least we have these n factorials. And then you have this tree representation in terms of trees that you get iterating by step by step. What was very nice is that if you use these trees, you get the same. So the Wilson realization group produce the same forest, which were used by Heck and Bogoliubov and so on to prove normalization. So I mean, you can get the structure of clusters or using the graphs and then separating the overlapping divergences as was done by Heck, Bogoliubov, and so on, but directly without thinking at all using the realization group of Wilson. This is an example of clusters. Then this tree and cluster were used in a famous book by Feldman, Hart, Rosen, and Wright of the 88 for QED. In this paper, they prove n factorial bounds. The point is that they use momentum regularization, so the world identities are all violated. And then, in fact, one needs to introduce non gauge invariant counter terms, A4 and A2, and so on. So the point is that at the end, when you remove or cut off order by order, you can impose that the world identities are verified, but we know that we cannot really
remove the cutoff with at the non-perturbative level. Okay, but another approach was based on realization group is given by Polchinski. Then there is a very nice review of Polchinski in 92 about the realization group, which I suggest is very, very clear. It's based on flow equation. And this method was used by Keller and Copper to prove order by order methodology of QED4 again. But again, one needs this A4 and A2. This is a problem of realization group with Wilson cutoff to get that. You get this broken term, this term broken gauge symmetry. And then this was extended to Young Mills, but without matter. So the proof of Copper is for Young Mills, but without matter. For the full electroweak theory, I think no one has done. So now let's go to the non-perturbative results. So a crucial idea for fermions is that there are cancellation, an idea which was in Caianiello, Nuovo Cimento, which as it was Italian, I was supposed to know, but I learned this fact from the paper of Gavieschi and Kupiane. Then I asked to people, but do you know this Caianiello? And then I discovered it was very famous in Italy. But I didn't, I just read in your paper that, and I said, who is Caianiello? You should know him. Instead, I read Gavieschi and Kupiane, and the first reference is this. Then I discovered it was Professor Guerra, for instance. But I didn't know anything about him. So anyway, this was the first who said, apparently, according to them, that use this idea of the Bernoulli and ground bounds for, so the idea is that the fermions has this cancellation, so you can prove convergence using these determinants bounds. And then this can be combined with Bridges, Battle, Feder, Busch formula, which is the proof is in Lesouche. I guess if I understand well, there was a mistake in the proof, which was corrected by the Selam, if I understand well. Yes, it's correct or not? I read that in some paper.
You did an alternative.
Yeah, and you gave an alternative. So it was
I
not
don't
a
know if
mistake.
There is
anyway, so you did also correction. No, you did, you changed the proof in a play, not in the format. There was a sort of hole in the proof, as far as I understand. Anyway.
Paper by Lischnitz, yours.
No, that is later. Okay, anyway. So this formula is very nice because you see the problem of graphs is that there are too many. Okay, so that is for physics this common. I mean, when you use common graphs, you have an n factorial square graphs. So with the 1/n, you get n factorial. So even if you prove they are bounded, then there are too many, then you cannot prove analyticism. But this formula is very nice because it extracts the propagator. So you use this G. It allows you to make the integration over the coordinates, and then you can bound the determinants with the maximum, and then in this way you eliminate the n factorial. So in a sense, you are regrouping enormous class of graphs in a very simple way. So you eliminate the n factorial. So I would say that the first proof of realizability of a theory would be easier if you use this formula, but instead history went differently. And the first proof of a renormalizable theory. I will skip about the non-normalizable theories for lack of time, so I start from the 85, was done by Gavieschi and Kupiane, in which they construct the gross Debye model for n greater than 2, and then simultaneously Feynman, Manier, Rosso, and Seneor. They didn't use this formula, but they used the phase set decomposition and Meyer and cluster expansion. Later, Lesniewski considered instead use that formula for the Yukawa model, which is super normalizable. And then it has other problems because you have to extract lines. But then it is the first place in which I think it was used the ground bounds. Then the Gellium model, so it started, as you see, this paper are 92, no, 99, not so long. This is a mistake. 92 is something strange. Okay, anyway. 89, I don't know, it should make easy what was. It should not, but anyways, yes.
What about this Feldman Osterwalder slide work, the big work?
Is that fair? This is fair. It says history of everything. Put an order. Okay. So then this genome is the sort of graph the way with n equal to 1. This theory has, it is 2002. This theory has non-trivial fixed point. It is a marginal case. Instead, the case of the so the Yukawa case is super normalizable. The Grosdeve case with n greater than 1 is marginally irrelevant. The Jellion case, which is essentially Grosdeve with n equal to 1, is marginal. So you have a line of fixed points. So it is more difficult because, of course, if you have a second, if you have an asymptotic free theory, then it is enough to cope the second law. So you cope the second order, then you bound the rest. So you know it's negative. But if it is marginal, then you have to cope all the orders to prove it. Otherwise, you never finish. You cope the law. The fourth order, and then one can say, well, what about the fifth? So it can put you in the floor again. Okay. So this was done by at the beginning by the indirect argument. And then we gave, I will tell you how we did it, a direct proof of this Vanishing Beta function much later. Okay.
No, it is a two dimension. Yeah, I'm saying, see, this is two dimension. Then there is this mass, it is the Grosdeve in two dimension with n equal to one, essentially, infrared. Okay. This is the Jellion model. I mean, it's a model for non relativistic fairness, essentially. So in this 99 was the period in which started this interest for condensed matter. Then there is paper mass generation in the infrared Grosdeve 2, which is very similar to the problem of Young Mills. So I think this is very interesting, but there is a gap between it is related with the thesis, I think PhD thesis of Kupianen, which is for the nonlinear sigma model. I think it was very much connected, but in this paper of Copper, there is a gap between the infrared and the ultraviolet, so you cannot follow all the flow. Okay, this problem of the gaps of the two regions it appears everywhere.
What was done in the thesis of Copper?
In the nonlinear sigma model.
What was done for the nonlinear?
I ask you. It was proved the gap, the degeneration of the gap.
With a fixed cutoff. I mean, if you want to do really the Young and Mills, you have to do like this one. You have to remove both the ultraviolet and the infrared cutoff. Yes.
So Cooper had two papers, one of the sigma model, which came later.
Yes.
But the one on the Grosdeve was with Ivan Manieros.
You are right. Yeah. So, yes. I forgot. This is the one of this. Yeah, strange. I don't know how. Yeah, of course. Yes. So Cooper Manieros. Yes. This one was the same as the sigma model of that. Then Kavinsky and Kupianen did an epsilon expansion for fairness with ultraviolet. Then more recently, Julian Maspitovich from Frescolo applied similar ideas to consider synthetic fairness in the infrared. What is interesting, we get analyticity. And then I have no space in the slides, but then here start these enormous developments of applying condensed matter, Hubbard models, and so on, but I will not speak about them. But then since the 90s, there was a lot of interest in this community of people to go in the direction of condensed matter. But maybe I could say something as I have time. The problem in the condensed matter in two dimensions is that the singularity is not a point, like in quantum field theory, but it's a surface. But that's changed completely the problem. So it's a surface, which is called fair surface, and then you have a lot of strange geometrical problems. Okay, now bosons. So I put some results. So Pater Vallavotti, maybe very old result of the 80, P543. Infrared 544, infrared. Kavinsky and Kupianen again, 85, and then Magnensen et al. Rousseau in 86. Then it is the book of Roland, Bridges, and Slade, probably the results before, but I quote the book. Then there is this epsilon expansion by Bridges and Slade there. Then the Senam also did this complete flow, and so on. So pure Young and Mills, which is really the core. In fact, you are right. In fact, you are perfectly right, you know. Where Simon, okay. So I decided to put the cutoff in both directions. I should have now you say that, of course. Yes.
Since you are talking about constructive theory.
All right. I decided to speak about this. Yes. No, I have the answer. I remember the answer. I will speak about only the renormalizable model, except of the one on the board. What is that? Otherwise, perfect. Put Giovanni. But the point is that I will speak about only about I'm sorry, now it's better. Remediation group and the normalizable models. More or less, it's correct. Of course, there were a lot of non or super normalizable models where Russ-Simons, Spencer, and so on. I did not find it. Or also because I almost finished the time. Yeah, but because you wanted to arrive to this Young and Mills. So Young and Mills, this is his famous paper of Balaban, 84, 89, with infinite point. Here, this model is with the infinite volume cutoff and the lattice regularization, which preserves the gauge invariance, block spin, and so on. This method we're using quantum recently for quantum drive information. Then also Magnani Rivasori did this paper. It is very different. Now I have not much time to discuss the difference, but in this case of Magnani Rivasori, they use momentum realization. So you get again this countertent, which are non-gauge invariant, and then they use a lot the positivity of this lambda. Where instead the Balaban use some kilocomplex correlations, but doesn't have this effect.
The Magnani Rivasori, they're not saying it's a proof, right? That...
Yes. Well, okay. Yes. They say that is okay.
Yes, I'm just trying to. I mean,
yes,
that's
yes.
The paper where they so say the point, this is an
yes, but also Balaban says the proof is very long. So the point is, what is a proof? So so also the human being is important. If you have suppose you have a proof, this. You own it in an island and no one can understand the ring. Is it the proof or not? It's like the problem of a tree so falling in a forest. No one heard it. Is it a proof or not? Who knows? I mean, it's also important that the human beings read, understand, reproduce. Otherwise, what is it? So
how many proofs here fit into the category?
Also that, okay. So here I answer with another joke, which I always say is that for everyone, the level of rigor is himself. No, there is no even anyone, even if someone, even if Lambert, even everyone thinks that other people are less rigorous and they are more too much rigorous. For everyone, the level of rigor is low. So that's my answer. Who knows? But it's a scale for everyone. There is no one can say that's is enough. If you ask to logic, say, oh no, okay, you understand. Now you are making me not on time. No, I have time. It is important. So then people look at, so this is just the ultraviolet, so the easy part. So what about the infrared part, which is really the main aim of this collaboration? So again, there was the hope in the 90s to say, that is too difficult to study a simpler problem. Mass generation for VCS theory in two dimensions, or Bose-Einstein condensation using the Balaban ideas. This was a big group of people, again, never completed because there are still this problem of connecting the two regimes, the large ultraviolet and the very deep infrared. So in between, it's difficult to connect. There was a big enterprise, a lot of nice ideas, still incomplete. This fact. And of course, I will not speak about the recent, I will not speak about the older result, the link JFT, where assignment. So then I will not speak about the more recent result of this collaboration, because tomorrow we'll see them. So it's important. Okay. Ah, yes. So let's see. So here, well, now I hope to have some time to say about my result. So here, the main problem is to remove the ultraviolet cutoff and prove the mass generation. But of course, one can say, what about the electroweak sector? I'm interested in that. So in the electroweak sector, we know that we cannot make this. Cannot remove the cutoff. It is proven for 5-4 by Frederick and Eisenman, Dominic Copain. They proved that it's important, it's trivial, the theory. And despite this fact, the theory of sports has a meaning. You want to arrive to exponentially high cutoff. And then it's very important also that mathematicians remember the numbers. For instance, the mass of the electron must be much smaller than the mass of the Z. So if you integrate the mass of the, if you integrate the fermions, then you get the terminal, but if the mass of the fermion must be greater, then the charge is completely useless, I would say. The mass of the electron is almost zero. So it's very important that also mathematicians remember the scales of the number. So this is 10 minus 6, very small. So the mass of the electron cannot act really as a cutoff. Because I say that because a lot of paper integrate the fermion, and but that's, if you integrate the fermion, you need a strong end. So now the main problem is to control the flow. One has to prove relation between random variables. So that's I already said. Okay. So now finally, let's arrive to some of my results. So let's just consider this massive QED2, which is I want to start by this basic problem. It's like QED4, but in two dimensions. So without mass, so you can make computation of perturbation theory. This was done, for example, Georgi and in 71, they proved, they used this, they proved that J5 is equal to 1 over pi. The anomaly is 1 over pi. And then there is psi independence. So that's, so, and then also there is a decrease of power time. Remember that in four dimensions, you have the theory which is non-renormalizable, which must be renormalized. In two dimensions, the theory should go from renormalizable to supernormal. Okay, so immediately people when see this say, okay, but then there are solvable models. Solvable models are Sommerfeld, Hagen, and so forth. But they get differences. So if you consider solvable model, you get any value for the anomaly, and you get an infinite wave function realization. This that should be not true. Why you get that? It's not a, it's so different from perturbative result. Is this a mystery? No, because it's in this extra solution are very formal, but when you consider formal integrals, you have to regularize in some way. And then regularize these integrals using momentum regularization, so typically braiding. So now let's instead consider the full that regularization. Again, the model is the same as before. And I think 10 minutes. Then, for instance, you can prove this theorem that there is no infinite wave function normalization. The limit exists, and then the anomaly is 1 over pi. So exactly what you get in perturbation. So the results also, I don't take the limit a equal to 0 in this case, but I don't want, because I want to consider uniform in a, because in four dimensions, I don't have, but I could take it. So there is no wave function normalization. Okay, this is, was done in paper. So let me say two words how this is proof. So now there are two regimes. So I put the mass of the boson. So you have ultraviolet and infrared regime. And in the ultraviolet, I is super normalizable. So I can do this. In the infrared, you have all is renormalizable. Then you have all this kind of random coupling constants. So again, as in quantum electrodynamics, so you need a relation between the random coupling constants. So at the end, the metric is that you have to prove the quartic is proportional to zeta, to the wave function measure to the square. Okay. And then the zeta one, so zeta j, zeta one, the current, you have a relation between random coupling constants. They are identical to the one in quantum electrodynamics, which is zeta one and zeta to zeta two. So how we prove that? Because if you consider a measure group, you break the one with that. Okay. And then also you have to prove the anomaly. So how is, it can be that the anomaly is a single number. So that's maybe I should have stressed more this fair. It's very strange, this result. Maybe I should say more. Typically, the physical object are series of terms, but now it is only a single term for them. Okay. So why there are all the other terms disappears? Okay. So now both problems are started. I think I have 8 minutes. Both problems are faced just introducing the reference model, in which in the infrared is the similar. So this reference model is a non-local Turing model. Then, which is the idea? If you put on the lattice, you have gauge invariant, a sort of world identities which are exact, but you lose the chiral symmetry. Okay? So you cannot have it. So but then if you consider this model, you break the you break the gauge invariance, but you have the chiral symmetry because you put the momentum cutoff. So you combine, then the idea is that we can tune the parameters of this reference model so that the fixed point is the same, because it's a line of fixed point. So you can tune the parameters so that they go to the same point. So I use a bit of the property of one and a bit of the property of the two. Okay. So now the infrared of this model is very similar to the other one. So now, but then I put an infrared cutoff. So I have a sequence of models, and then I compute the physical observables at zero. Then I get information for all the random cutoffs, because I can change the cutoff. Then now, if you consider the world identities, you will get this delta, which is the cutoff effect, which breaks the world identities. So naively, you could say, well, when I send the f to infinity, then it's zero, but it's not. The point is that this data does not vanish because there are the anomalies. But if you extract the anomalies, then it will be small. So you can prove that. You remove the cutoff, it's given by them. But if you fix H, it's a small correction. So you have to make tricks like that, that you consider the composition, and then at the end you have to show that use all these graphs, except this one, this golden zero column to infinity, just because this chi minus one has the fact that you have one line which is hanging to the deep ultraviolet. So all these other terms appear except the A. So, and at the end, in this way, combining with Schrödinger Dyson equation, you will get relation between random. Now we have to prove that. So that's it for to control the flow. Now, how you prove the anomaly? Then again, you see these are relation now a bit quicker than normal. Then you have relation. You see this gamma mu is the J5. So you have anomalies both for the current and the chiral current and the car. Because if you put momentum, the car is not conserved. But then, so you have all this number of Z, but then you have, now I'm going to be quick, but we need to see that. Well, so all this, as I said, I have to fix the bare coupling to have the same fixed point. But they are not independent. Again, there are what that is connecting all this bare coupling of the reference model. So there is a lot of algebra. At the end, all the dependence on lambda disappears. And then by a completely different method, you get the anomaly, which is not normalized. It's tau depends on that. So there are some. So let me say quickly, so that's also what was very important. There is a very big universality class of this model. Among them, let me stress these diamond models, which is the same class as this vertex model. It's a non-interact solvable model. And then you can prove some relation between the amplitude and the, you know, using some ideas from Kenyon or Concord Schick or discrete holomorphism, combining with that, with this approach, we can prove some relation. Okay, let me finish. Okay, so let me say two words in 3 minutes. Sorry, but you are not protesting, so you can get how much time. You are interested, so maybe I want
to understand you. You have 4 minutes.
Only 4 minutes. You are not very generous. That was my round, was often more. So what we have in more dimension? In more dimension, in four dimension, we have the same model as before, so fermion vector model. Of course, in this case, we cannot do better than that. You see, you have the cutoff, A will be 1 over T squared. It's not arbitrary because it's not normalizable. But still, it is very interesting that we get the other Bardeen result. It's exactly that without any normalization. The idea is quite simple. The normalization group tells you that the three-point function is equal to the free one plus normalization plus a term which is regular, and using regularity and word identity. And the regularity, you can get, you get example. It is nice that we use the same ideas in a completely different fields, for instance, for graphene, because graphene can be considered a regularization of quantum field theory. And then you see the same argument produce you this universal. This is the same as anomaly for the transport coefficient. Okay. Now let's ask this. Okay, here also is interesting. How to get higher cutoff? To get higher cutoff, we have to do as before. So we have to consider the scales greater than M, decompose the bosons, use the word identities, but then you have to, I don't think there are conceptual problems, but you have work to do. You have to decompose pairs and bosons, put the word identities, put all together, and that should work. So that's, I think, is a very strange that no one has done. We have done only other cutoff. So final result. So I want to turn where I started to this magic G minus two, which is a sort of, I think it's one of the most nice results in physics. So can we prove a bound for the rest of the G minus two? So we can do that only for the Z sector. That is the easiest one because it's U1 and there's a mass. So that is the easiest case. So Jacob and Weinberg and then other people compute this This is the second order for the compression. And then what we would prove, but then now I've got no time to explain, but it's not even not obvious to give a definition of the geomagnetic factor in a positive sense. It's not complicated because if you look to the books, the geomagnetic factor is expressed in terms of four factors. You have to produce the definition of books in terms of correlation function, but you can do that. Another very important point is the following one. The G minus U is related to an irrelevant point. So while the anomaly is marginal, the G minus U is irrelevant. It's negative dimension. It's the derivative of the three-point function, which is zero dimension. Please explain why you could ask that. So you know that the alpha, the anomaly was universal. Why in the transport is universal, the whole of the one is that the G is not is a series. Okay, so why is a G is a series instead the alpha the anomaly is not? Because as you will see, one is it's universal and one is irrelevant and the other. So I think this is the last slide that I but that would be the result which I like because this says you that the you consider a model of the U1 sector zeta with a cutoff lambda. You want to say this model is well defined, the limit in infinite volume, then the contribution to the geomagnetic factor is equal to the result of Weinberg and Jekyll plus an R, and this R is sum of three terms. The second one is the difference between cutoff and continuum, and the third term is the sum of all the series. So the series can be bounded. What is also important to note is that M is very small, it's N squared over M large N squared. So you have to prove the same factor in the same, in all the series. Okay, and it is what we achieve. I mean, there are cancellations that you can expand, and then also you use this of that. Of course, the dream would be to put here a log. It seems easy to put just a log, but of course the log would be physically meaningful, but it's difficult because we have to decompose stuff. So, and then also you have to have a complication, you have cancellation anomalies, you have a number of problems. But at least this results show you that in principle you can. And these are that I put just on the way, just to make sponsor that. Okay, so this is sort of two words of hope. So from Newton to Cauchy, there were 110 years, so we are still on scale. So, so that's
one of the areas for the start of the discussion. So I have a question. So in some cases, like I think for the solar system stability, people were actually able to put the actual numbers corresponding to the solar system and see some things worked out as they should. In your analysis, do you think, because we are using small gamut, do you think that 100 or 1/137 is going to suffice to make your estimates work?
This is the sentence I always write in the papers when I said to physics Europe. So the result of this, I say that in the first days, I mean, as you know very well, in the first days, they made by first the double Kolmogorov about the solar system, and then the assumption was that the mass of the Earth was a fly, right? And then it improved, and it arrives at two asteroids. So I'm completely sure that this is doable here. Again, it needs work because only to go from the fly. And first of all, you need Arnold and Moser, which improved the bound. And then there was a lot of people working on numerics, but I don't see any reason why this could be not done. But let me add that now, I mean, yes, I think so. It's because these methods are used also for the KM. Let me say even more. For the KM problem, that is the series are studied by the National Group, which is exactly this method. And using this series, I don't know if everyone is familiar with this topic, but this is the series for the stability of the solar system, which was done in the 80s and so on, 2 centuries ago. Then it was proven to be convergent in certain cases, and from that some stability of solar system can be derived. But the first proof of Kolmogorov assumes can be put as a good rule here, the constants, then the mass of the Earth is a flat. So that's works in the theory only in the case. It's a mass of flat. But then now it works for asteroids. So asteroids and flat is a bigger, doesn't work for the solar system, but it's beginning to be an unstable, but works for a big asteroids, which is much better than flat. So I'm not sure we will arrive to one over into the 137, but maybe I don't know. I never really look to the numbers because they're not good. But maybe not so bad.
Questions? Well, just think here again.
Oh.